Welcome back to Extension 720 here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, a new report out shines a light on a particular government program you might not be familiar with. But the CVE program is very well known to Muslim and Arab youth in Illinois. The CVE is an Illinois program that is funded by the Department of Homeland Security, and its job is to help communities and law enforcement officials recognize the signs of radicalization and domestic terrorism. But according to the authors of this report, the CVE, which is short for Curbing Violent Extremism, is doing less to foster community and more to undermine it. Tonight we talk about domestic terrorism and the tools that our government is using or misusing to fight it. In studio, one of the authors of the report, Debbie Southorn. She's a program associate at the American Friends Service Committee in Chicago. And Mohammed Sankari, who is with the Arab American Action Network. Mohammed, Debbie, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having us.
First of all, the report is called Suspected and Surveilled. A report on countering violent extremism in Chicago. Why this report?
The report came about after a couple of years of community organizing and sort of awareness raising around the ways CVE programs are rolling out in Illinois and how they're impacting Arab and Muslim communities in particular. And for a number of years, actually, Nicole Nguyen, the lead author of this report, had been doing FOIAs and Freedom of Information Act requests to just find out what these programs even are.
Right.
How is this happening? Because we know it exists, but we don't know who they're partnering with locally. We don't know how the money is being used. And so we've just been collecting a lot of this data for a long, long time. And we were finally like, you know what? The public has a right to know about this.
In the report, you talk about the origins of where this comes from. And it came from the Obama administration 2014, which was almost a remarketing or a softer approach to fighting violent extremism in American communities. This is something that seems on the front that like a good idea to partner with community groups. But as you point out in this report, it's just being used from law enforcement officials to surveil.
Yeah. So, you know, it comes in a line, like a long history of these kinds of programs that we've seen in the United States that use the guise of counterterrorism to really ramp up surveillance and racial profiling, predominantly of Arab and Muslim communities. And then oftentimes these tools are actually then kind of rolled out in other ways. Really, for us at the Arab American Action Network, we're super clear that CVEs, they just don't work.
On paper, the idea is that partnering with the communities so that communities will better understand when one of their members is radicalized. That's the concept, right, behind CVE and why the Department of Homeland Security is funding these.
I mean, I think that the first problem is, what does that mean? And what are the signs of radicalization? And both of those questions still are unanswered. And in the report, you know, Debbie and Nicole did a really great job in breaking down why the premise itself is problematic. And social scientists agree across the board, including ones who work on CVE. There's no such thing as a marker of radicalization. There's no way you can look at me and Debbie and say, based on these 10 criteria, Debbie is more likely to become a violent extremist, or Muhammad is more likely, or whoever, right? Not race, not class, not... And these, you know, used to be ideas, right, of like, if someone is poor and distraught and whatever, they're more susceptible to violent extremism. That's not actually the case.
Well, Debbie, you do a tremendous job in this report of breaking down some of the different departments, not just here in Illinois, but around the country, that have put together some of these warning signs. And they are so vague.
Right.
And on purpose, I would assume.
Right.
But they're vague that it does make you scratch your head, because it could be as simple as growing facial hair or not sure what you're going to do next with your life is one. You know, like this idea that there are, they really do keep these vague. But these are the points they look to when they look to who's being radicalized.
Right, they're vague, but they have religious and political markers to them, right? So when you were saying there's no difference between us, I was giggling because I'm like, actually, you have a beard. And according to the FBI and a number of other frameworks that have been put out, that is an indicator of radicalization,
right?
So I think the first piece of this is really just debunking the idea that there is some kind of pathway, or that there are like clear indicators that can tell us for certain someone's going to become an extremist. And then with that, that also sort of erases the political landscape that we live in and what other factors drive the decisions people do have around radicalization, for example. And it erases sort of inequality. And actually, if anything, further criminalizes dissent, right? It says if you're unhappy with how things are, that could be an indicator.
That's what I mean, the vagueness where you look at the indicators of who could be a violent extremist or who could be radicalized. They are pointed at youth, Right. Like anyone who's young, you know, just the idea of what you're going to do. You're not sure. Maybe you don't. You want change. You want to get involved in your community. To other things as well, where which seem to be much larger. And when you talk about profiling and you talk about discrimination or just stereotypes, growing beards, entering places of religious gatherings, things like that, that seem to point to one religion over another.
Definitely. I mean, I think that that's exactly spot on. The you know, and that's why we've been so adamant in our organizing against it, is these undertones of the national program is really just like people from the Middle East, East Africa, South Asia that are of Muslim faith, right? That's generally what like the undertone without saying it has been and continues to be. So I think that it's exactly spot on, yeah.
Well, and I think the other key piece of this, right, is then what does the sort of community engagement aspect mean? On its on the surface, oh, community partnerships, that sounds like a lovely thing. But when you really peel this back, it's actually really concerning to think that in order to access like more social service funding or in order to access resources, right, community groups or mental health professionals or even teachers, right, are being encouraged to report people to law enforcement. Right. Here's resources with this important string attached, but we're going to de-emphasize that string.
Right.
And what it's leading to is more and more contact with law enforcement for communities that are already experiencing marginalization.
And this is not specific to Illinois as well. There are community organizers all over the country that are dealing with the Department of Homeland Security's CV programs, whatever state you're in, because of the fact that it seems more often that there is pushback from those community partners and others who say, this is discriminatory, you're just using me, or you're using the CV to surveil our communities.
Exactly. And we've been in partnership with people around the country.
Exactly.
So folks in Minneapolis, actually an amazing group of young Somali activists, have been calling out the ways that CVE funding and programs have really led to some really harmful consequences in their community. Some folks in LA actually managed to get LA County supervisors to reject a CVE grant, which was huge. Right. So this is happening nationally. And part of why this report felt so important is because the sort of elusive nature of these programs, right? They all have different names that sound like great things. Targeted violence prevention, how wonderful. Or because of that, people don't know that it's going on. So we just really wanted to spotlight how this is happening here. And frankly, because of the pushback in other states, they're constantly trying to repackage and rebrand. And right now what's happening in Illinois is kind of the front end of that rebranding.
The report is called Suspected and Surveilled, a report on countering violent extremism in Chicago. One of the co-authors of the report, Debbie Southorn, is in the studio. She's a program associate at American Friends Service Committee in Chicago. Also, Mohammed Sankari is here. He's with the Arab American Action Network. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and continue the conversation here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Welcome back to Extension 720 here on WGN Radio. I am Justin Kaufman. In studio, we're talking about the new report that's out called Suspected and Surveilled, a report on countering violent extremism in Chicago. And the report is co-authored by Debbie Southorn. She's here. She's a program associate at the American Friends Service Committee here in Chicago. And Mohammed Sankari is with the Arab American Action Network. It is interesting because, as you mentioned, Mohammed, this comes from a long line of these kind of programs. And we were just discussing right before we went to the break. And one of the things I thought about was the FBI has had a troubled history with entrapment. And we saw this in Chicago where they'll say they caught a terrorist before they did it. But the reality is when you step back, you see a long system of persuading that person to radicalize, trying to find a youth to go along with a plan that might have not even been their plan, but it's something that the FBI. So there is a long history to the way law enforcement has used some of these tools with communities of color and the Arab and Muslim communities.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that that's an observation that unfortunately a lot of people don't know more about, is when we start to unpack a lot of these quote-unquote foiled terrorist attacks in the United States, like the ones in Chicago, the young man who's still in the going through the court system right now, Adib Dawood, where it was a FBI agent who had provided him the ideology and then the tools and the money and the means and the target and the fake weapons, and had just spent 2 years essentially mentoring him in incorrect ideas and in dangerous ideas to push him to a point in which he was willing to act on violence. You know, that's one extreme. We also have programs, mass surveillance programs that have been rolled out after 9/11, or the registry programs that were rolled out after 9/11. So again, you know, it's coming in this long history. And because of that, I think that the base of the community, as we say, like the average person, is so against these programs and so distrustful of what these programs might look like.
Debbie, that's part of the reason you guys put out the report, right? Because as you mentioned, they changed the name of these programs, or in the Obama administration, seemed to go out of their way to market it differently, to make it more of a community relations program as opposed to an anti-terrorism program.
Absolutely. And I think another iteration of that we're seeing now is the ways that CVE in just the past year and a half, 2 years, has been sort of expanded to be confronting white extremism, right? White supremacist extremism. Right. And while on the surface, that might sound great, right? White supremacy is awful. We don't want white extremists, right?
Right.
In practice, what has happened as a result of expanding CVE to supposedly include targeting potential white supremacists is that it's just providing legitimacy to a program that continues to overwhelmingly right. target Muslim communities
now,
and again is based on some flawed science.
And that's
so it's not actually
and I want to get back to the flawed science, but there is something that law enforcement officials will point to the fact that it works. They'll say that maybe they're taking away the rights of some, but it's for the good of all. And you hear this over and over. You see it with stop and frisk was a big thing when it came to police offices around the world using stop and frisk, but here in America. But there seems to be this logic, especially after 9/11, mm-hmm. that, you know, some will lose their rights for the good of all. Is that what CVE is?
Yeah, the kind of the age-old safety versus civil liberties kind of debate that we're always pinned into. And my response is that it actually doesn't work. There's no data that can show us that when these programs that mass surveil or push entrapment or hype up policing of specific communities just do not work. When you pump tons of resources into finding a problem, you bet you're going to find that problem. But objectively, as you said before, when you take a step back and analyze this kind of rationally and objectively, you say we're not actually doing anything. We're not actually winning anything or preventing anything.
When you talk about the flawed science, and this is important because what happens is it feels like the indicators or the scientific rationale saying we have figured out that this is what's going to lead people to radicalization. Well, the problem at the end of the day is who is identifying that? Who's putting those things together? And that's in the science community. You mentioned social scientists around the country and the world to say that's not accurate. But it still becomes logic. It still becomes the thing that is the backbone for the law enforcement officials around this country. So who is making those lists and why are we sticking to them?
In Illinois, right, I think one of the people who's been really, really pushing the science behind and the sort of theories behind this program is a researcher at UIC named Stephen Wine, who's taken Department of Homeland Security grants in order to create the social science that'll justify these programs. I think the goal, right, is that actually then community members will be the ones who will be doing the identifying. That's mm-hmm. the goal of CVE, right? Is that it won't be law enforcement.
Right.
That this is an alternative to law enforcement. If we give you these tools...
See something, say something.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
But again, we don't have evidence that it's worked. We have overwhelming evidence that actually it's just furthered harms in the community. And then I think the other piece of this when we're talking about sort of like stopping white supremacy in CVE is that one of the groups that was going to take a CVE grant, actually based out of here in Chicago, called Life After Hate, for years they'd been doing de-radicalization work with people who self-identified. So I've, you know, someone comes to them saying, I've been
right.
a part of a neo-Nazi group and
right,
I want
right.
help getting out. There's some validity to having a group to help people get out of that. The problem now is the ways that with CVE, they're trying to say, oh, we're instead of letting people self-identify, we're
going
to try to... We're going to try to use the internet and your search engine tools and also sort of these other nebulous things. We're going to take hundreds and hundreds of thousands yeah. of dollars to maybe identify you and then be able to stop you.
It's so interesting because these are the same themes that are playing out in other crime fighting areas right now. You mm-hmm. see a gang database in Chicago as one. We see a predictive technology that yeah. says where the next shooting might be. But a lot of the critics, we had Cory Doctorow was in here last week talking about you can tell technology to do whatever you want it to do. You can
exactly.
you can use stats, but if the premise is false to begin with, all of it is false. And there seems to be similarities in this case.
Yeah, and I think that a very important question you asked is the why. If we can point to a bunch of educated people who do research that say y'all, this isn't working, this is not how this works, why is this prevalent, or why do these ideas prevail and these markers still exist, I think is because it fits dominant political narratives that we have right now, and it furthers political goals. In the case of CVE, it's the goal of U.S. foreign policy, right? Of we have a war on terror, we have enemies, and we need to maintain our foreign policy. Because if we don't fight them there, we're going to have to fight them here.
Yeah, but they also will make the argument saying that this is protecting the United States of America because there are people who do want to do harm to it.
And again, I think that fits in, right?
Right.
And same with predictive policing. If we feed enough data into a system that says more shootings happen on the west side of Chicago, you bet that algorithm is going to spit out that the next shooting is going to happen on the west side of Chicago. But it's missing all of the context to it.
You know, there's the overwhelming thought here as well is discrimination among Arab and Muslim American communities.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't get talked about as much as discrimination in some others. Why is that? Because it seems to me that the relationship between law enforcement and the Muslim and Arab American communities is as divisive or as fraught as others, the African American community, the Latino
right.
community. So why do you think it is that we don't hear more stories of profiling or more stories of police misconduct when it comes to these communities?
I think the first, you know, it's always good to take responsibility first. And I think that our community and our community institutions can do and should do a better job of elevating these stories. And I think that because of this national security versus civil liberties box, community leaders oftentimes shy away of saying, well, we want to talk about this as well. And then I think that the other piece is that, again, you know, there is a important political context that it's happening in with U.S. foreign policy and U.S. domestic policy. And so the FBI, with their entrapment cases, fulfills both ends of that in terms of fulfilling domestic policy of showing that, like, we're doing something and it's working.
Mm-hmm.
And then the foreign policy goals of what do we want to do in the Middle East and why is it important that we keep up the fight there so we don't fight it here.
And Debbie, back to the report as we wrap up. As you set out what the problems are with CVE, what's the fix? Is the fix to work on a different set of facts that start the premise of a CVE, or is it to scrap CVE entirely? What's if we all can agree that curbing violent extremism is important, what is the fix?
I think the problems with frameworks like CVE is they assume that law enforcement is going to be the fix. They assume that the answer to violence is always more policing and more enforcement. I think similarly, like in Chicago, there's questions around like, how do we end violence in the streets or how do we end gang violence, right? You were mentioning predictive policing. There's so much money being poured into that right now. Can you imagine how different things would look if we poured the same kind of resources into after school programs, jobs for young people, into real economic development that meant communities have what they need in order to thrive? I think similarly, when we talk about violent extremism, if we erase the larger political landscape of empire, right, of extreme political imbalance, of who's in power and who is not in this country and around the world, we're doing ourselves a real disservice because we're erasing sort of root causes. So I think in a really big way, what we say is the answer is actually resources for communities that are marginalized. And part of that, too, is more access to mental health resources. We know one of the groups that the law enforcement is constantly trying to target for entrapment, for surveillance, and even in Illinois, they are targeting mental health professionals to keep an eye out for mentally ill individuals. We need resources for people, not to set people up to fail, which is exactly what the paradigm of CVE and of surveillance and enforcement in general have been doing.
The report is called Suspected and Surveilled, a report on countering violent extremism in Chicago. One of the co-authors of the report, Debbie Southorn, is here. She is a program associate at American Friends Service Committee in Chicago. And Mohammed Sankari is with the Arab American Action Network. Thank you so much for coming in tonight. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having us.